Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm Michael DeCamp, your host, and I'm here with my co-host extraordinaire,
First Mate Angela DeCamp.
Hello, Angela.
Hello.
And we're excited to be joined today by my friend Rick Hastings.
Good morning.
How you doing, Rick?
It's a good day.
And we'll talk a little bit more about Rick and what Rick's purpose in being here today is when we get to the interview portion of this, but I'm glad that you're with us today. We will start this off just like we usually do, talking about
our tradition.
It's become a tradition. This is episode 16. So
I really enjoy this tradition, actually. It's like grown on me talking about this.
Kind of like a mold or a...
Yeah, like a mold, like a penicillin type situation.
it's like a fungus. It's coming up your leg.
It's actually causing me problems. But yeah, no, I enjoy it. But I see you have a book here that you'd like to discuss.
I do. Yeah. You know, I don't have a lot to discuss about it, but you know, years ago I read the book, The Shining by Stephen King. And of course I saw the movie. Did you see the movie, Rick? Shining with Jack Nicholson and here's Johnny.
I just recently watched the sequel.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm going to talk about here. This book is the sequel to The Shining. So it's Stephen King's Dr. Sleep. So, and I just recently watched the movie too. What'd you think of the movie, Rick?
I liked it. Mary and I are very big sci-fi people. We like outer space. Anything that's creative.
Yeah, yeah.
And even if it's silly, we sometimes appreciate the creativity of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one is definitely not silly, but it's on the
different side. It's yeah,
kind of horror oriented, but I thought it was a very interesting take on the continuation
of the story.
Of the Shining story. So, those of you who haven't read Dr. Sleep or seen the movie, basically from The Shining, the little boy that escapes with his life from The Shining.
Hello, Danny.
Yeah, Danny grows up, and Danny. He, as an older man in his, what was he, probably 40 or 40
probably
something
like in that range.
Yeah. He's having a rough life as he would based on
the trauma,
all the trauma that happened to him and then things in between. And, all of a sudden, you know, he kind of starts getting connected with some other people who have similar gifts again. And, ultimately there are a group of people out there who are ancient, but they eat the spirits of the people who have these gifts. And
so the adventure ensues.
Yes. And so eventually they end up back at the Overlook Hotel and a pretty exciting story. And I thought that Stephen King did a very nice job wrapping that whole story up. And I very much enjoyed the movie.
Well, and actually I've never read the books, but I've seen both films, the Stanley Kubrick and then, oh goodness, Mike Flanagan, I think, did the film, the Dr. Sleep film. And he actually, have you ever seen The Haunting of Hill House, the newest adaptation that's on
Netflix? I haven't seen
Netflix.
The newest one, no.
He's the one behind that. And it was just wild. It's very good. He's very good at like turning horror, not just like this is something scary popping out at you, but it's actually like a representation of something psychological and like that tells a deeper truth. And so I really enjoyed how he's done that with both Dr. Sleep and also with The Haunting of Hill House.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Well, that brings us around to our guest today, who has nothing to do with horror novels. But obviously he likes sci-fi and kind of crazy adventure kind of books apparently. So, but Rick Hastings is our guest and, Rick is here because,
were you going to ask any of us about our books?
Oh yeah.
Well, just your book today.
This is why we have a co-host. This is why I have a co-host to keep me on track. So yeah, let's do that first.
Sure.
So.
I don't have a book. Well, I have an adaptation. So this is going to make me sad. I feel like the last couple of weeks I've talked about Sense and Sensibility, but I'll take it back. One of the books that I just really loved was Pride and Prejudice, which I feel very cliche saying that. And I'm talking to two grown men, so I don't think you would share that affection for this book. But I recently watched or rewatched a YouTube series called The Lizzie Bennet Diaries, which is basically a YouTube video blog adaptation of Pride and Prejudice set in like a contemporary time frame. And I guess when we're talking about like adaptations of things, like I really enjoy seeing a new take on an old classic. And that was kind of one of those, but it was, I mean, it's, I think hundreds of, at least 100 or so episodes of YouTube videos laid out like the story of Pride and Prejudice. So that was interesting.
Interesting. Rick, you don't have to participate in this, but any books come to mind that you really have enjoyed?
You know, I'm going to pass on the books. I wasn't ready for that. I've read several books, but what comes to mind is something that is heartfelt. And Angela, you had mentioned a old take on a, how did you say that?
I don't know if it's like an adaptation or adaptation.
Did you go old take to new?
I don't remember now.
That's fine. But what I was thinking is taking a new look at old takes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the old take is people.
Okay.
And I have been a caregiver for a while with my wife's family and my mother. And it's just amazing. And I wish everybody would take a look at the inside of these people rather than the outside shell.
Yeah.
When you pick up a new friend who is aged or senior, mature, try and take a look at some of their pictures. Take a look at their high school photo. Take a look at their, when they were young families. Try and get to know them when they were the same age you were. Mm-hmm. And it'll really put a new perspective on who they are and how they feel about life.
It's fun too. Like when you're growing up, you just think of your parents as your parents, you know, like, oh, they're just the old people. But then like once you start kind of learning a little bit more about dad's having a fit over here.
Yeah. I'm having a little tickle in the throat and it's getting
dropping
a
little, yes. Lozenge around.
I was trying to be quiet about it and not be noticed.
I'm going to call you out every time. But no, like when you start learning about your parents and your grandparents, like when you're old enough to understand that they're just, they had lives before you. It's pretty interesting. And then you can start applying that to basically everybody.
Yeah. We had a life before you.
I really highly doubt that based on what I know about you. You know, I think I probably brought the life, you know, but.
Did you get to finish your comment?
Yeah, that's fine. And I appreciate the same thing about those who are younger than me and trying to understand and getting to appreciate them as an adult. And I guess that all, you know, revolves around our experiences. What sort of experiences have we had and what has shaped and formed us into the people that we are? Some people you might consider to be very intellectual might not have had an experience that you consider very simple and everybody should have had. So it's just a matter of appreciating people for who they are and respecting the experiences they've had that have shaped them to that person.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. I think it's especially really valuable to consider that we're all individuals that experience life in completely different ways, especially as we're going into like election season and remembering that we're all people and we all deep down should respect each other.
Mm-hmm. Respect is good. And due diligence is important.
Yeah.
If we haven't been involved in elections before I always suggest don't just pay attention to what they're saying. Look into the background for yourself so that you understand the possibilities.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on into the interview about why Rick is here today.
Yeah. What is he doing here?
I was willing.
He was willing. Yeah.
We found him in a parking lot and threw him into a van and drove him over here.
I slipped him a $500 bill and he. Well,
where's mine?
Well, it went to Rick.
I really have used that.
All of this is a falsehood. I'm fibbing to my audience now. So sorry, guys. No, Rick is a friend of mine, and we go to church together, and we were on a podcast, a different podcast, a church podcast a while back. And one of the things I learned about Rick is that he actually, while he didn't pursue it as a career, he actually took art as a course of study in college. And now that he's retired, he's pursuing a lot of those artistic endeavors. And so this podcast is all about being creative. we've had a lot of authors on here.
Yeah.
We had a comedian a while back and, we've had a few other things, but, I thought, well, let's branch out a little bit. Let's talk to Rick about, you know, pursuing art from college, jumping the career years. What did you do with that there? And then what's it like now as you're retired? So Rick, why don't you tell us, just tell us a little bit about yourself to start off with, anything you don't mind sharing with the rest of the world, because literally anybody in the world can hear this. So, don't share any private personal information, but tell us about yourself.
Well, first of all, aloha. That's to everyone out there in the world. A little bit about myself. I grew up in Michigan and ended up meeting my wife on a blind date. And aww. And of course, I'm going to be 65 in May. So I've got 65 years of story. So I'll try and keep this short and brief and to the point. But I went to school in Texas, and the group that I hung around with, one of the girls in that group lived in Michigan. And when I would go north during school breaks, she was disappointed that I never contacted her in Michigan, yet we hung out together in Texas. And so one day I called her and she said that she was busy, but she had a friend that she thought we'd get along with. And so I was introduced to my now wife, Mary. We'll be married 42 years in April. And we just started having an overload of stories that we dumped on each other, started telling our life history. And we did that over two weekend dates and decided on the third time around that we should get married.
What?
Well, she lived in Michigan and I lived in Kentucky at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so
a third date decision to get married.
You're like, all right, you know, well, let's cut to the chase here.
Third date decision. But you know, what's quite interesting is our backgrounds are totally different. Other than in Michigan, you are exposed to many different ethnic groups. You grow up with a variety of ethnic groups, and she is a Serb. Her background is Serbian and she was Serbian Orthodox. I come from the hills of Tennessee and my background was Church of Christ. And so we had quite a different background, but I just have to believe that God was the author of our story, because we just are just so close together, just so intertwined with our lives. There's no separation, and like I said, we'll be married 42 years.
That's
so
great.
I mean, how do you do that, right?
Yeah, I guess you just wing it. I don't know. Well, it's funny because it's things like there are things like that that it just is divine. Like,
exactly.
If you knew a third date, then I mean, shoot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what happened there. And I ended up working with her brother who had a construction company, but that because I had a need for work and he had a need for somebody he could rely on, trust, respect. And I did that for about 6 years and it just wasn't me. The conversation was the same every day. And it was conversation that I really didn't engage in. And so I did it. It was hard to break away, because his mother and father were very involved in his business. And all of a sudden here comes this guy that kind of takes their place and lets them rest. And so that was good, but I got out of that and I went into sales, been in sales all my life, did well in that, didn't really do any art. But I had a wife that had a long honey-do list. So I became a DIY guy. And we've built every house that we've lived in.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so I was the laborer and most of the labor and did a lot of the work. And even today, what's quite interesting is even though I'm pursuing some of the creative aspects that I'm interested in, just this past year, she pushed me over the edge again, and I have built furniture, which I never thought I would do. And I fought it, but she convinced me. And basically, it's about, for in regards to the furniture and stuff like that, it's just about having things you would like to have, but you have to make it yourself if you're going to have it.
I think you appreciate it more when you make it yourself, too.
Well, you do. You do. So that's that was an extension to things I thought I would never do that require some patience. Require some fine tuning, such as an art project. And I built a bookshelf and two end tables.
Nice. Now, what intrigued me about your story. And the reason why I wanted to bring you on is because you told me that you were taking art in college. So, but then you had this long career in sales where you didn't do art, and now you've revisited it. So talk a little bit about your early years and what were you pursuing in art, and where did you go to school for it and things like that?
Sure. The reason why I was always a sort of good at drawing, and we lived across the street from a recreational park, and they would have people come in every summer and have do things with the kids in the neighborhood, and which I did as a child. But as I grew older, I was still involved. I was across the street, so I would help other younger children draw. And the biggest kick I got out of that, an example I always use, is to help them understand why when they were drawing, one arm was not longer than the other. And just using that as a basis, I thought that I would do well in art. When I went to school, I went to Abilene Christian University. So I went all the way from Allen Park, Michigan, all the way to Abilene, Texas, didn't know anybody, but it was a Christian university, and it was something that my parents aspired to, so I decided I would do that, and it turned out to be a great life experience. When I got there, I did start out as an art major. However, the instructor, the gentleman that mentored me, that I just really looked up to, was dismissed after my first semester.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's really too bad.
Yeah. I can understand. You know, they had some certain reasons, and he respected the reasons, as do I. And what happens is it changed my major, because I was a young, impressionable, hurt. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to determine what would I do now. And my parents, I was the first in my family to go to college. And so my parents were very supportive, but they couldn't really give me direction.
Right. They hadn't been there.
Hadn't been there. Good people, just didn't have that level of experience. So I was pretty much on my own. So I thought, well, what can I do? I said, well, I can talk. You know, I like to talk.
Yeah.
You know. So, and I'd been in sales, you know, selling clothes, different things. And so I thought I would take up a career in communications. And that's how I ended up with my major was public relations, actually mass communications, and I emphasized public relations. Never used that except for
today.
Majority of my life. That's right.
You're using it today.
That's right. Well, the majority of my career was in sales.
Yeah.
And so that was the best way I could use my communication skills.
Nice.
So when you were taking art in college before you switched majors, try to use actual full words. What was your skill? What were you focused on back in those days?
Well, in those days, because I only did it for the first semester, I was in a pottery class, and it was working with ceramics and throwing bowls on, you know, and I really enjoyed that. I liked working with my hands.
I agree. I took in my major, we had to take a different like sculpture and ceramics and different things like that. And I've been dying to just take another ceramics class like now just for fun, because like it is fun. It's like you feel like you're really creating something. It's a different experience than just drawing. And then you end up with all these great gifts that you don't have to go out and buy for people's birthdays. You can give them something handmade. So that's my little side note here.
No, but go on. I think that is true. And it's kind of fun to be able to give somebody something that you've put together and they respect it, whether they like it,
yeah,
you know, because it was from you.
And you're really like taking the earth and making mm-hmm. it into something like useful.
And I think that's why I continued. I could draw. I'm not a painter, mm-hmm. except for the walls of the house. I'm pretty good at that. But I could draw, but when I got with that ceramic, with that pottery, forming things with my hands, that was when I was most relaxed, most in the zone, you know, enjoyed everything. And that's why, today I still do things with my hands more so than with my, vision. Some people can see what they want to do before they do it, and mine kind of evolves. I mean, I do use, I will create patterns and things like that based on what you're doing. But my wife, Mary, she can see it and I can make it.
That's so cool. That's like a neat little partnership that you guys have. It always makes me think, when you said that, it made me think of what Michelangelo and his approach to sculpting. Have you ever heard that? Because he'd get these big chunks of marble, and he always said that like he could actually see what was in it. He was just carving it away to let the figure be free. And he didn't carve like a lot of the Renaissance artists would carve, but they like kind of chisel around and they just get a general form. But he would like go and carve out the final form. Like it wasn't just like rough and then you finesse, like sanding it and getting it mm-hmm. perfect. It was like, he just carved it exactly like it was supposed to be right then and there, which is crazy. Like it's very, very challenging to do. So I found that to be everybody's a little different in that way. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a just different sight, different inspiration, different ability.
So you transitioned into communications and public relations and ended up in a sales career.
Mm-hmm.
Across your years in the career, your job doesn't sound like it was really, wasn't focused on art or in any real way, shape, or form. But did you find that your creative nature came out in your work in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I believe it did. I got to go back to communications on my real abilities with what I did is because I could hold conversations with people and develop relationships rather easily. And for those of you listening, that's it. You got to be a good listener to be a good communicator. And so that's another thing that helped me through that career. But as far as creativity, I started out in sales, in one aspect, financial insurance sales, and transitioned into photography. And from that point, yes, my creativity made a big difference, especially when what I did is I worked with church groups, all denominations, even anything that was a group, I would put them together for photography, and we created directories, much like a yearbook in high school. And doing that, they had opportunity to display their ministries, display their activities and things of that nature. And I could help them with the layout and help them with the photography, being able to, well, of course, photography is its own art and you still have to have the vision. I think I have a better vision for photography than I do for actually.
There's a dog in this house, just so you guys
know. Yeah, it's a Cutter's Notch guard dog.
The Cutter's Notch wolfhound that protects us.
Yeah,
he's in the protective stance right now.
Yeah, he thought he heard something.
Probably just a ghost.
But I was able to use my creativity more in the photography end, and I do have a better vision, better visual for photography than I do in actually making stained glass, pottery, things of that nature. So yes, it did help my career in sales.
You know, what's interesting is you say you have kind of an eye for photography. I feel like I should have an eye for that, but I don't. I use photography to I'll take an image that I've taken. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be amazing. It's just sort of mediocre. Mm. And then I can paint that or draw it. And I feel like now I've got my vision. I can express that, but I for the life of me cannot take a photo that's really like emotive or cool. It's just going to be a reference photo.
Well, here's the secret. Everybody get your pencil out, take lots of pictures.
Yeah. Just keep doing it.
You'll find a good one.
I think that's like the suggestion across all mediums. Goodness gracious. This dog. This is the suggestion really across all media is like, you know, just get it out there. Like writing, just start writing, just, you know, whatever comes to mind, art, just keep drawing or do whatever. What is the music? Like just practice, just get the weird stuff out and you get better over time.
Right.
Exactly correct. I have thought about writing. And so I have a lot of respect for Mike and being able to put all his thoughts on paper. It takes for me, it's a very, very tight focus to write. And I have to appreciate your family. At least for me, I just have to kind of get off by myself, be by myself. And that and hours can pass when you're trying to put something on paper. And those hours are passing quickly for you. You're in your zone, you're enjoying it, but then you got to remember your family's over here wondering when you're going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of time. So I've considered something like that. So I have a lot of respect for you that you can do it.
Well, he made me move out. So that's why it works for him.
Well, she was 7 years old, and I said, get out.
You know, you can live out in the woods, learn to survive, that's call that, of the wild. Here you go.
There's a shed in the back of the Cutter's Notch Studios, and I put her bedroom in there. Yeah, back. It's sort of not heated or anything.
It's a little damp, but, you know.
There might be a little creative storytelling going on right now.
Yeah, this is definitely not true. So. But you did make me run laps behind it.
I did. That was how I dealt with her, you know, when she was obnoxious and she'd run laps. She'd earn laps during the week, and then she had to.
It was so like I have a lot of feelings about the effectiveness of that type of punishment.
It probably wasn't the best.
No, but it happened, and it's over now.
We'll end up on Dr. Phil, now, and he'll be telling me about it.
Now I have plantar fasciitis, and I'm blaming you for it.
I don't think that I made you run that many laps.
I think you did. I think it's leftover residual
up and down the basketball court or across the tennis court, something like that.
It wasn't a punishment. It's all about love of your child. Trying to get them active.
We love each other.
That's it. Great.
Okay. So, you know, I find in my job, I have never, my job always has been sales too. I've been in industrial sales since I got out of Bible college. So I went to Bible college and then I went into industrial sales. What a combination. But I've been doing that since 1984. With one little exception of a year I spent in the ministry in South Carolina. But that's not really conducive to using an artistic, creative.
Yeah, it's a different, more analytical, I guess, probably. Yeah.
But in sales, the interesting thing is having a creative mind in sales is useful because you actually can create strategies for getting into basically how do I get this customer to buy my product, and so you begin to think creatively of what steps do I need to take or how do I need to approach this. So I've used my creativity in some ways when it comes to that.
Oh, sure.
So, but ultimately I had to find an outlet because I do have this creative nature, and I felt very boxed in the business world. So that's where the writing came from. Okay. But I used to sit in meetings, and I'd sit in meetings and I would be doodling. Not really doodling. I'd be sketching something. For a while, it was...
Little comic?
Well, I did the comic. I did the Henry the Preacher comic. But in those of you listening, you can see some Henry the Preacher pictures if you go to some of my social media sites. But I also used to draw floor plans. I do architectural floor plans during a meeting.
Oh, that's fun. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, it kept my mind awake. And so I would draw up a floor plan. And then a couple of the times I sketched somebody like sitting across the table from me, I would just draw them.
I really think that if you had the opportunity when you were younger and like the interest that you would have probably gone visual.
Yeah, I would have had the interest, but I needed the opportunity. And I didn't have the opportunities when I was young.
Yeah, and when we took that art class together when I was in like middle school or high school or something.
I think you were middle school.
Yeah, I remember being jealous actually of you. I was kind of like, I'm supposed to be the artist because like, you hadn't really taken any classes, but you had such a natural aptitude for it. And you were older. So you kind of, I think you, there's something about understanding instruction a little better that you seem like you picked it up really quickly. And I think that if you had the like interest even now, yeah. Like I think you'd be pretty decent at art.
Probably one of the greatest things that I discovered in that class that we took together was just looking at the negative space. Mm-hmm. You know, you, when you're trying to create an image, you know, you look at the major features and you don't, And like I would want to draw the lines around it, but the whole idea is to see in between and begin to see the shading.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that previously. And I think it's like, that's the number one thing that I find about art that I think a lot of people don't know when they haven't spent a whole lot of time learning is that art really is so much about learning how to see things differently and how to translate what you see on page. And there are different ways to think about what you see. And like when you hadn't ever been taught about looking at the negative space, the space in between things to help, I don't know, coach you along in how you're drawing, then, you know, it is kind of mind blowing when you first think about it.
And that's why, you know, like there's all kinds of examples of that just in logos and in life. I mean, it's like,
it's the FedEx logo,
the
right?
FedEx, yeah. The arrow in the FedEx logo. Nobody can, a lot of people don't know there's an arrow in a FedEx
that once you see logo, it, but once you can't unsee it.
That's right. You can't unsee it.
And that's negative space. That's what that is.
Yeah. Or the little board that's got all the little sticks on it. And if you just look at it, it looks like a bunch of little sticks glued to a board.
I don't know but what when you're talking about.
Well, we got one in the window out there. When you begin to see it and you can see the negative space, it actually spells out the word Jesus.
Oh, see, but nobody's going to understand that on the podcast. I don't
Probably somebody, it's been around for a long time. So there's probably a lot of people who've seen it.
Maybe.
But that's seeing the negative space. And once you see it, though, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
Until you see it the first time, it just looks like a bunch of sticks on a board. But okay, let's move on a little bit. So you're retired now. And besides your honey-do list, you are starting to pursue some of these creative things. So what kind of creative things are you doing, Rick?
Well, when I decided I would retire, a friend of mine and I were talking and we both decided we wanted to take a pottery class, a ceramics class, because I had not taken one since college, didn't have a clue. And we both thought that was good. We were both fairly creative. And so we went and took this class. And I think for many of the people, they didn't have the same, everybody had different levels of vision and creativity. And so some of the people might not have had the experience of working with clay. A lot of people were excited about getting on the wheel and throwing a bowl or a dish even or something like that. Yeah. It kind of bored me. So in that class, first time back, I did sculpture, head sculptures of heads and things like that.
More hand building.
Yeah. And again, that's working with my hands. And so that kind of got me started and I really liked it. The only thing I didn't like is that if I wanted to continue doing something like that, I'd have to get a kiln. I'd have to do this.
Yeah,
I'd have
kilns, to do that. It's not just the cost of the kiln. It's the cost of like the electricity that goes to the kiln because that is expensive.
Yeah. That you're right. And just the fact that it could all fall apart after all those hours of work. And a friend from church, her father did some stained glass work. And I said, oh, that's cool. I said, that'd be cool to learn. Yeah. Do you think he'd, teach me to do that? Well, this gentleman was 89 years old. He was more than happy to have somebody visit. And he was a very smart guy. And he had a little stained glass studio. And so I went over there and I did a couple of small projects. One of them, no bigger than 8x10. My first two projects, in fact, they were a little bit smaller than that. And then I moved. I moved from Michigan to Indiana. And when I left there, he was done. He sold me his equipment and everything, and I thought I'd get involved in it. We moved to Indiana and built a house. And over our garage is a large 5-foot-tall window, but there it's just an attic space. There's nothing there. It's a fake window. And so my wife, my inspiration, said, I would like to have something in that window and you're going to do it out of stained glass.
I like this woman. She knows what she wants,
You're going to have to meet Mary.
Yeah, I definitely will now.
And I said, okay. And I just buckled down and I got to it. And what you don't know, or maybe you do know about stained glass, is you can do it kind of like someone, a seamstress or someone who is making a dress or even building a house. You do have a pattern that you don't go by the pattern. I mean, you could, but this pattern I had to create. So I did the design, determined what I wanted it to look like. I did the design. After that, I created a pattern, and then I went and bought glass.
Where do you find glass? Like, what? Because that's actually, stained glass is very interesting to me. I've been really interested in like getting into it for years, but it's like, I don't even know how you would.
Where
do you get the supplies? What supplies do you need? Like, how long does it take? I'm really interested in this.
Well, there was a place in Castleton called the Merry-Go-Round, and that was a stained glass store. They did instruction. They did restoration. They sold supplies. They went out of business. Locally here, the only thing that you can really do is Hobby Lobby. They do have stained glass supplies, enough to be sufficient. But if you wanted to get into larger pieces of glass,
I'll have to order it.
Kokomo.
Really?
A lot of suppliers get their supplies from Kokomo. They have a stained glass factory.
Kokomo is like a lot of weird hidden treasures.
So there's an actual plant that makes stained glass in Kokomo.
One of the first.
That's so
they've been
crazy.
Doing it forever. Yeah. And so I was quite surprised, but that was pretty cool to do the tour. But that's where I've gotten some glass recently.
What's the name of the place? Do you know?
I
I'll look it up while you guys are talking about it.
I don't know it off the top of my head, but that's where I've gotten some glass recently. But I've done a lot of fun things. I'm not doing it for income, but I'm doing it to keep busy. And it's been mostly gifts. Like Angela had mentioned earlier, it's something that you can provide to people as a gift. And
it means so much more, I think, too, because people are like, I couldn't even find this to buy. And it's something that was made for me. It really is special. And also, it's Kokomo opalescent glass.
Yes, that's it.
It's online.
And so I've made a few things for friends, like housewarming gifts, or we had some friends in Colorado, and I wanted to do something for them, and they had hummingbirds all over the place. So I did some hummingbirds and sent it to them, and they liked those. Our minister, where we worship, our ex-minister where we worship recently left, and the church, as Mike had mentioned, we go to church together, or we attend together. They had a logo that just really inspired me. And so I took that logo and I created a piece of stained glass.
I saw that in the photos. I was like, that looks like the Sharing Hearts like logo.
Yeah. And so I gave that to Greg, and,
oh, that's
and
sweet.
Hopefully that was something that was heartfelt for him as it was for me. And so I've done a few gifts in the way of stained glass. Right now I'm just waiting for the next one to come my way. What I'm going to do.
Do you ever take like commissions for like money?
The only thing that I've ever done is I had, it was a couple from church and they were doing a flip house and they wanted some stained glass. They found out that I did it. I asked them to give me the design they want and to go to Hobby Lobby and buy the colors they wanted. And then I put that together for them. And so they just basically covered the cost of the supplies. And then they gave me a gift certificate for dinner.
Okay.
But I've never charged anything. Not yet. And I haven't really seen... My wife and I get a chance to go to Hawaii, and there's a lot of artists there, and we just really love the art. And I'm going, oh yeah, there's no stained glass artist. Oh, that's cool. And I went to talk to somebody that was displaying art, and I said, yeah, I noticed there's nobody really doing a lot of stained glass. And they go, well, when the tourists go home, it breaks.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it wasn't the best medium to do for touristy things.
Right. I feel like you could still sell them.
Well, you could. You can sell them if it breaks. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'll make you another one.
Yeah, we can repair it for a fee. Yeah. I was interested in that because I had an art instructor in college who said that you have to know what like your work is worth and charge what it's worth. It's important to like have that. But she said, you know, either give it away as a gift or charge what you're worth. Like don't kind of give discounts around. You have to be able to kind of hold a standard for that. And looking at your work, it's like pretty decent. I'm pretty impressed.
I'm glad you used the word decent, because I feel like I still need a lot of improvement, but it's fun. It's therapeutic. It's, yeah. You know, you can really, really get into it. But for your benefit, maybe my benefit, I do have sort of a small passion to learn how to do oil pastels.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason why I say that is because a very close friend of mine, he was a draftsman and he became a preacher, but he's an artist. He's a true artist. And he started doing these oil pastels, and he would go wherever he went, he would set up his easel and he'd do a pastel, and people walking by would see it and they would buy it. And the unique thing about that, it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be anything more than just an experience, because he would go to, for example, Key West, and he would be doing a landscape and people would walk by and see it, and they are experiencing that on their vacation, and they had to have it.
And you just do it right then and there. You know, one of the things I've been asking for years, and my lovely family finally got for my birthday, was a travel easel to be able to do paintings kind of wherever and whenever outside. And the only thing that's really held me back from doing it is like making sure I have all the right oil paints, all the right solvents, the brushes. And I'm thinking like, well, oil, there's a difference between oiled paint and acrylic. Acrylic is a water-based paint, so it dries really quickly. Oil is clearly it's oil-based paint, so it takes a very long time to dry. I shouldn't say dry. Technically it hardens. It doesn't dry, but we won't go into that. But if I went acrylic, when you said that, it made me think I should do acrylic because it'll dry really quickly. And then if somebody did come up, boom, here. You can buy it, Venmo me right now. Like, that would be really cool. What a great idea.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can see a partnership in the works, right?
It's here. Opening up. Well, and if you did that, what you could do, if you like did some pastels, you could have like business cards and if you like stained glass, here you go. Like sure. I also do that. And that would be really cool.
Or visit my website.
Yeah.
And they can see everything that you did, but it's because you're spending your time doing what you enjoy in a beautiful place. And these people are at a beautiful place once in a lifetime, maybe. And they're watching you, the artist.
Yeah. It's an experience for them. Like it's an experience for you, but it's also creating an experience. And I think it ties them into feeling like a part of it.
It does.
You know, not just going to a gallery and be like, oh, that's pretty, I'll take it, which I've had maybe happen a couple of times. But yeah, I think being there and witnessing it is something.
It's a feasible way of turning a profit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fun.
Yeah. It's fun.
Okay, I have one last question for you.
That's it?
Well, we've been going actually for 40 minutes.
I'm enjoying talking to Rick.
I know. Well, me too. too. But all good things must come to an end. We have to leave people wanting more. Oh. So my last question for you before we get into the random question, because we have a random question box here too, Rick. Rick and I were on another podcast I mentioned earlier, and we do random questions on that one also. Excuse my cough.
We're all like clearing our throats
right
this time.
In the middle of that question.
Leo, you want to bark again? Maybe.
So, yeah, the guard dog is asleep now. So, you changed directions when you were in college. You started out thinking you were going to go into art, and you had some things happen, and you changed directions, and you didn't really pursue it again until you were retired. So, if you were talking to a young person who was faced with that kind of a scenario, maybe they've been wanting to pursue art and they've had to change directions. Any advice to them across the years?
Yes, I think I can offer that. I think it holds true to life in general, not just necessarily your goals with art. You have to be involved in it to even stay close to it. So I did through the years is I have a daughter, she's 30 now, but
it's
through
a beautiful age. It's a great age.
Good age. But through the years of her development, Mary and I were very involved in her activities, whether it's school or at church or whatever it might be. We were always there together with her working with that. So we were always, sharing our talents with whatever was needed. For example, it might be a backdrop to a Valentine's Day dance. Well, we would do that for them. I know who the photographer was. That was me. And, but just, you cannot, for me, pursue your love while you are doing what you have to do. Don't let anything get rusty or cobwebs in between time. Try and stay with it.
Be consistent.
Even if it's just a little bit of something, you need to do something to keep it alive.
Yeah. Cause I think if you take a break, and I know I have, you take a break from something for a while, you come back to it. There's a certain amount of like relearning things again. You're like, oh yeah, that's how I did it. That, you know, it takes away some time when you could really just be jumping right back in.
Yeah. Relearning and motivating and visualizing, it does take time. And so my best advice is to find something, even if it's volunteer, to be active in your talent.
Very good. Very good. All right, let's do it.
All right. We're going to really change gear here and talk about something random in the random box. Did you guys like that? I knew it. Okay.
Sing it, Angela. Sing it.
That's it.
That's another talent she apparently has.
You can say that's a talent or a curse. One of those two. There you go. Pick a thing. Don't tear it up. And then just read the question and we'll all answer it.
Okay. I've been into the question box. And what is your favorite comic or cartoon character? Wow. Now, being an artist and creativity, I love all the cartoon characters. If I had to pick a favorite one, kind of embarrassing, I guess He-Man comes up.
Oh, that's cool, though.
Oh, okay, Masters, yeah, I like it. The Masters of the Universe,
yeah. He-Man. I guess I like, even today at my age, I appreciate a good animation. And it's only because of the creativity that goes in behind it. Now, today, a lot of the creativity is done on computers, and I don't understand how they do it, and I don't want to learn because I've got other things to do.
It's a lot of, there's just so much.
There's a lot behind it. But it's just the creativity that is behind the cartoon and the character. And then what's even cooler than that is to find out from the artist what motivated him or inspired him to create that particular character.
Right, right. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I, the one I was thinking of, because we've had this question before, and I have to answer this question periodically myself, and Angela was going to make me anyway if I didn't. But the one I saw one this week that I really used to enjoy their little spots when they would be on TV. I don't think they're on much anymore, but it was Pinky and the Brain. Mm. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
And what are we going to do today, Brain? And we're going to take over the world. So it was, I just got a little kick out of those guys, and I've forgotten all about them until I saw a little cartoon that was probably on Facebook or something.
It is really funny that you say that, because I was just thinking, I keep thinking of this, because that was on Animaniacs, right? That was like the cartoon that was on.
Probably.
And on the theme song for Animaniacs, they're like, there's a part in that we're like, expect the unexpected or something. But when I was little, I just heard expecty unexpected. And I was like, that's so weird that they say that. Oh, well, it's funny. And it was only like within the last year that I realized, no, they were saying expect the unexpected, not expecty unexpected. So I feel a little silly, but I wanted to make that confession.
Well, that's like, lyrics of songs.
I was thinking the same thing.
For years and years and years, you think the lyric is some unintelligible word, and then all of a sudden it clicks in. Yeah, I
agree.
You're like, that's what it is.
Or worse, that's what I've been singing
the whole time.
So yeah, it's cool.
I'm trying to find, sorry, I know I'm looking at my phone here because I follow a lot of different like people who do comics and stuff on Instagram, and Seth, following me like over 600 people. So it's hard to find their actual names. I wanted to share.
Angela's looking that information up. As I think about a cartoon character, you know, that is art as well.
Oh yeah.
And that's, I don't know if you've directed your questions toward that subject, but I mean,
some of them I've tried to keep the questions somewhat related to the creative world, whether it's books or
so it
movies
wasn't just,
or TV or cartoons or
it
what,
wasn't
whatever
simply maybe. Something that kept me occupied as a child, right?
Not necessarily, no. Although, but, you know, that can be part of it too.
Again, it's the creativity that really catches my attention, and whether I'm interested in the topic on the show or whatever it might be, it's the creativity behind the show. Funny story is my daughter was, I think, 3 or 4 years old. We went to Universal Studios, and there was a King Kong ride, and she was just overwhelmed. She was scared. And we said, "That's just movie magic, honey. It was movie magic." We got back home and there was a show on TV called Movie Magic.
Oh, wow.
Oh. And so it turned out to be one of her favorites, and it helped us explain to her what was going on behind the scenes. And that it was all just about somebody's vision for being creative with this story.
Right, right.
I think I'm clearly not going to find any of the comic artists that I wanted to find. I could have been more prepared, so I apologize.
Well, this is an off-the-cuff question. You didn't know that question was coming.
So I wanted to have a different answer than the one that we had before when I think it was with Frank Black that we had this question last. And I really was hoping that I would have a new one. Okay, no, wait.
Uh-oh. She's found it.
I found one.
We managed to stretch this out long enough.
I'm really trying to draw this out. Finally found it. I apologize if you're like listening to this in your car, like, goodness gracious, wrap it up. There is an Instagram account. I just like to share Instagram accounts that do comics because there are a lot of like little fun little comic things. And this one's called Pants Pants. Yep, that's it. Pants Pants.
That's the name of the cartoon, of the comic?
Yeah, it's sort of like, I don't know, I think I kind of like sort of dark stuff. But like there's this one with this guy and he's a painter and there's this little painting and he's saying, "Doug, paint over me. I must not exist." Like just sort of sad, like kind of creepy. But if you go on Instagram and you look up Pants Pants, That's the account.
I'll probably look that up because you mentioned one a couple of podcasts back and I went and followed it.
Yeah.
They're fun. They're fun.
Little, it's poorly drawn lines, I think, was the
poorly
one.
Poorly drawn lines.
It's funny.
Yeah.
It's more self-deprecating type humor.
Yeah. And there's another one that I've been following too that I can't remember the name of it, but just funny stuff. And they're new. And you know, the whole Instagram and social media world kind of gives people who do that kind of thing a new outlet to get their stuff out there. And sometimes they get picked up and they really become popular. So that's a lot of fun. Rick, thank you so much for being with us today.
This has been fun.
Yes, it has been really nice to talk to you. And I want to go ahead and plug to please leave us a review or, you know, rate us and review us on either Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us, because we're basically everywhere. And also wanted to give a special thanks to Bill Whitehair, who has been tirelessly helping us with editing these podcasts. So thanks, yeah, Bill.
Bill is the technical support behind this program. And, you know, it's recorded on my equipment. And then I clip the beginning and the end and maybe a little bit in the middle here and there. And then he does all the finish work and then posts it. So
thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Bill. We appreciate you. And catch us again next time on the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address, authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope. A Cutter's Notch novel can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.